Hello and welcome to the 3W6 podcast from Vienna, where we have a number one island too. Season 11, episode 19.
My name is Harald.
And my name is Markus.
We're here to talk about narrative pen and paper role-playing games.
And our guest today is Tim Denay, designer of Deathmatch Island. Welcome to the podcast, Tim.
Kia ora. Thanks for having me.
Could you just introduce yourself?
Sure. My name's Tim Denay. I'm from Aotearoa, New Zealand, Wellington specifically. I make games and game-related things as Old Dog Games and have done for a few years, starting with some Blades in the Dark maps and then moving on to Odyssey Aquatica and now Deathmatch Island.
So I have to start with this question. Just how much do you love John Harper?
Very much, very much. Yeah, I don't know how that developed. I mean, I do think we're sort of kindred spirits, both RPG design-wise as well as, you know, he's a graphic designer by trade and background, and as am I. And I think there's, some shared ethos there.
Yeah, let's talk about that graphic design work, because I think you came to many people's attention first through your graphic design work, specifically your detailed maps of Duskwall for Blade in the Dark, and also your illustrated diary of a 1,000-year-old vampire, your playthrough of that. Can you tell us how this came about?
Yeah, well, the maps, I mean, the story there is pretty simple. I mean, I've been a graphic designer for a long time. That's my day job. So when I started playing Blades in the Dark, basically I just wanted to zoom in a little bit more on those maps. So I started making them for my own use and shared those on the Google Plus group, as it was back then. And people were into it, basically, so I released them all widely. And so that's basically just a story of making something for your home game and then finding that other people kind of dig what you're doing, so sharing it more widely. The 1,000-year-old vampire, that one is more a case of some reason I found it hard to, I'd always wanted to try a solo RPG, but I sort of found it hard to convince myself I could dedicate that time to it for whatever reason. I mean, I'll play video games or whatever else, so it's not like it's lost efficiency or something, but I sort of felt I had to get more out of that time. So I sort of made it a project for myself to not only play this solo RPG, but also to turn it into a sort of an output, an artistic project. So that's how that began.
Short side question, as a designer myself, when you got into doing the maps for Blades, how much did you have experience with designing maps already? Or was this a new topic you dived into? Because maps and role-playing games are a very specific niche that's not that small, actually. So kind of like an interesting design area.
I did actually have a bit of a background in maps. I worked on this atlas of Aotearoa called We Are Here, with a geographer called Chris McDowell. I'm not a geographer or GIS person by background, but I had co-authored this book, which was partly maps and partly data visualizations. And it was basically through that process, that book took about 5 years, and it was through that process that even though he was the geographer, I learned a lot about geospatial, you know, cartography and geospatial science and things like this. I'd sort of been introduced to the wonderful world of maps. And obviously, even as a sort of non-technical map enthusiast, making maps for role-playing games is great because you don't have to hold yourself to scientific standards. So, yeah, I had a lot of fun with it.
Well, for Deathmatch Island, you not only did the maps, it seems like you did everything. Like John Harper, you're like this triple threat. You're a graphic designer, a writer, and a game designer. And did you do everything yourself? I mean, it's a huge package.
I mean, sort of, yeah. That's the short answer. I did work with Evil Hat, and they obviously brought other people on board to help with editing and sensitivity reading and, yeah, that kind of sort of supportive work, critical work around the main thing. But in terms of the book itself, yeah, all the writing, illustration, layout was all done by me. I don't know if it's a great idea to work that way. It's very slow. You know, there are so many talented illustrators and artists. Why not commission someone? But this is just the way I enjoy working, so.
Didn't seem slow to me. How much time did you spend in total? So what's the process like?
I mean, honestly, yeah, I say slow, but actually Deathmatch Island, I did turn around quite quickly. I think it was about 2 years from sort of conception to delivery, which is pretty quick. When I first signed with Evil Hat, Sean told me, you know, it's like 3 years to make a game from that first meeting. So I was pleased to beat that. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I did put a lot of hours in those 2 years. I guess I was a bit obsessive about it. I was just having fun, to be honest. So it wasn't hard for me to kind of kick it along in that way.
I also think the big upside here is that it's a very bespoke product in the sense that written content and visual design very much work together here. I've been recently on a writing retreat with the Gauntlet Publishing and did a workshop on design there. And we talked about Deathmatch Island because it has so many great examples of where you make use of layout to increase the information value of the whole thing. And I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I mean, there is an advantage of working this way. There are downsides, you know, as I see it, and especially for the editor, I was writing into layout for that reason, because I wanted layout to inform the writing and the writing to inform the layout. So it would be very difficult for me to write into a Google Doc and then have it edited and then figure out what, you know, I don't want to cast those words into stone, if you know what I mean. I kind of want them to be fluid so I can work them into the layout as I come up with layout ideas. That does make the editor's job harder, but for me, it was worth it in the end. But yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely an advantage of that approach, is that sort of cohesion between the visual language and the written content and even the illustrations. You know, it's quite easy to make sure that's all sort of on point when it's all coming from one person, whereas managing that across a team is a whole different art form.
Bit of a nightmare for translators, I can tell you, if everything is fit perfectly into that text box.
Yeah, I bet.
But let's talk about rules. At first glance, hacking a game about epic Greek heroes into a game about a battle royale seems a little far-fetched, but somehow you've made it a perfect match. Can you talk about how that idea came about?
So it's actually sort of simple in a way. We were playing a home game of Aegon and having a great time. I really enjoy that game. And something I enjoyed about it, which I felt was sort of unique to the game that I hadn't really experienced before, was this competition between the players, because in Aegon, you're competing for glory, and in every contest, one player, one character, they're the best, they get the most glory. And that's, you know, really makes sense with the genre of sort of vainglorious Greek heroes. But it was a lot of fun, and it was a little bit of sort of friendly competition between players, which is usually a bit taboo, I find, in role-playing games. I mean, it's not PvP in Aegon, but there's this competition. You're explicitly competing to be the best. And I thought it was fun. I mean, you know, when you look at other activities like board games or sports, that kind of friendly competition is very common, but you don't tend to get a lot of it in role-playing games, at least in my experience. So it felt kind of unique and interesting to me. And basically, I wanted to explore that part of Aegon and kind of emphasize it and just really make that the sort of focus of a game. And so a sort of a deathmatch reality television kind of context felt like it made sense there, where you have the same sort of competition amongst the team, the same sort of tension and trust issues. But whereas in Aegon, you save the day in the end and go home, in this game, I kind of wanted the catharsis of you've been competing with each other the whole time, but now let's actually turn on each other and see who's the best.
For me, that opens up a kind of a tension. I was a player in a one-shot or like a two-shot of Deathmatch Island, and I felt like, what's holding me back from killing the others right now? I know there's like a rule structure for that, but do you somehow have to deal with the tension that everybody is aware of the fact that we're gonna probably kill each other at the end of the game?
Yeah, I mean, that is directly inspired by Survivor, the TV show, which I like a lot. And my favorite dynamic in Survivor is that due to the structure of that game, at the end, there can be only one sole survivor. So you know that to get to the end, you're going to have to turn on your allies. But the other structure of the game is that it's all voting blocks. And so you need an alliance. You can't do it alone. So you need to form genuine trust and alliances with others to make it far in the game, even at the same time as you know that you will have to turn on those people or they will turn on you. That's just part of the game structure. So I think it's a really interesting tension and contradiction between putting absolute trust in people and knowing that one or the other will have to betray each other in the end. So I kind of wanted to explore that and heighten that in Deathmatch Island. And that's sort of the premise, is that you're on this island, it's sort of, you're all in teams and alliances. So if you kill all your teammates immediately, you're going to be on your own and probably not do very well. So part of the premise is that it's good to have a team, it's good to have an alliance, even though you know as you gradually progress through, there will come a point where you will have to turn on each other if you choose to do that.
I think you have a really interesting observation here, with one that most role-playing games don't go into friendly competition too much. And at the same time, if games do have PvP, it's basically just, here are the combat rules. If you want to fight your other players, go ahead. So there isn't really much structure to deal with how or why or when that stuff happens. And putting up a game that's specifically saying, we will have that, we will enjoy that kind of bashing in each other's heads, but in a very specific structure. What's your experience from like testing the game? Is this something that really resonates with people, or are they reluctant to engage in it, or is it just like it splits camps into like the people who are really diving into the game and those who are, well, no, give me content warning so I know that's not my game?
Yeah, I mean, there are some safety tools, so if people are fully don't want to touch that kind of thing, they can do that. You can play the game without that aspect. But I mean, in general, I think it was important to the game. The title says explicitly what the game is. It's called Deathmatch Island. So if you sit down, if you sign up to play or you agree to play, you kind of know what you're in for a little bit, that it's going to be Deathmatch on an island, probably. So I find that usually people are, once they've sat down to play, they kind of have agreed to the premise to some extent. I mean, there's a difference between that and abstract and the actual experience of playing the game. But I do find that the really explicit on-the-nose title kind of helps to some extent. I mean, there is a mechanism in the game to work together and to not turn on each other. And I think that's kind of like a pressure valve. It releases some of that tension. Again, it sort of depends on the group, as you say. Like some groups, from the start, you can tell they're not going to turn on each other because that's just the vibe. They're just not those kind of people. And in other groups, everyone is just having fun with that and enjoying playing those kinds of characters. And yeah, I haven't really had groups where some people really want to turn on each other and other people don't. I mean, I think people are pretty good at kind of finding that social middle ground. So if there is one bloodthirsty player in the group and everyone else is not that way, usually people kind of find a happy middle ground and continue on that way. For example, some people enjoy role-playing the character of someone who might betray the group. And maybe they don't go through with it in the end, but they enjoy the sort of drama and black comedy of playing the kind of character who no one's quite sure if they're going to turn on the others in the end or not, even if they end up being a hero.
We had this like obvious bad guy in the group who like signaled that from the very start. So it was very clear that this was not going to work out. It's also interesting. And I'm also thinking like I have teenage boys, right? They grew up playing Fortnite. I'm thinking you're sort of also creating a game for a new generation that is so much more familiar with that kind of genre, even though, you know, Fortnite, there's not a lot of story, but still, you list the media touch points, and like 10, 15 years ago, it would have been Survivor and Battle Royale, and that's it, right? Maybe the Hunger Games books, but it's interesting that this is really has risen to the surface so much in recent years.
Absolutely. PUBG. And yeah, there's a whole, as you say, massively. I mean, was Fortnite the biggest game in the world or something? Probably. So, I mean, just omnipresent cultural touchstone. I mean, I think you're right that kind of funny because those Battle Royale games, they obviously are a touchstone, but as you say, there's kind of no story to them. So in that sense, they don't invite role-playing. But I think that's part of the fun of the game. And what sort of intrigued me and why the redacted stuff is so important is that, to me, what's exciting is the idea of being in PUBG or Fortnite or whatever. You know, if you're in that world, it's what happens if you try to break out of the game or go somewhere you're not meant to or open a door marked staff only. Like, that's kind of the exciting possibility that role-playing affords, is being in this Battle Royale scenario but then deciding to break the rules.
Speaking about rules, so Deathmatch Island is not your first game based on the Paragon system. You mentioned it before. What do you like about this system other than the things you already mentioned?
I mean, I think the big thing for me is the collaborative nature of it. So, you know, everyone rolls at the start of a scene, and then going from lowest to highest, they narrate what happens from all the way along to the last player. And the GM equivalent can sort of interrupt in between to kind of, you know, give the reactions of the NPCs or move things along. But in my experience, often it's just player handing to player in a sort of rising crescendo of action. Yeah, I find that quite unique. And it's sort of, yeah, very writer's room collaborative without being too abstract. In my experience, it sort of strikes a happy balance for me. And so it's these Paragon games for me that have the most kind of improvisation on the part of the players, and they really just go wild with that narration and that description of what they did. And as a GM, often you can just sort of, once the dice have rolled and you've kind of done that bit, you can kind of just sit back and let people describe what happens for, you know, 20 minutes or something. And that's always a good feeling for me as a GM when I feel like I've talked at least.
I also wanted to talk about your campaign structure, because I think that's also very novel. The fact that campaigns are very short and the locales are very limited. But the idea is that you play through a campaign and then and you play through the campaign again with added knowledge, like secret maps and so on. And this new game plus mode where you even start the game with the intention of breaking the game, of sabotaging it, very much reminded me also of games like Deathloop, and that's also in the game as a touchstone, or even Dishonored, which again was an inspiration for Blades in the Dark, so full circle. But can you talk about your experiences with these kind of campaigns? Because I haven't gone through a full campaign.
The genesis of that was that I wanted to have the possibility, open the possibility, this redacted in-game, so that you're not forcing the players to turn on each other and to do the sort of classic deathmatch thing. Because as you sort of alluded to, doesn't necessarily, I mean, of course you can structure the game that we all just agree that's what's going to happen. But there is a part of you that kind of asks, why do I have to try and kill these people? Like, what if we decide not to do that? So I wanted to cater to that ending. At the same time, again, it is primarily a deathmatch game. I didn't want all the campaigns to kind of just automatically swing towards that sort of breaking the game, tearing down the system kind of ending. So there was kind of a balancing act there. So this kind of multi-campaign structure sort of let me have my cake and eat it too, in a way, in that I could balance the game on the first run towards this turning on each other, classic sort of standard end game, but then have these kind of legacy aspects so that when you do a second campaign, you're learning more and more about the secrets behind the game. You're picking up these secret maps and redacted items. And in that way, you start to lean ever closer to tearing the game down. And if you play enough campaigns, as you say, with the new game plus mode, it becomes inevitable that the game will become about destroying Deathmatch Island. Yeah, so it's kind of, I suppose it's sort of an odd thing because your characters only last usually for one season, as it's called. But items they picked up and secrets they picked up get left on the boat and passed on to the next round of characters. And so the only constant is you as a player in many ways and your experience of the game and the backstory that you're building to both Deathmatch Island and your various characters throughout multiple seasons. Yeah, and I suppose also inspired by, you know, legacy board games and things of this nature, which, again, you don't see a lot of that in role-playing games, but I think it's a really fruitful area to think about.
As an aside question, do you think about shorter campaign structures in general? Because my personal experience is the older I get, the more I'm interested in shorter sessions and shorter campaigns. And in your case, you really leaned into that and made it an interesting feature, not just like it takes less time. So any thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like many people, I back too many Kickstarters and have so many games I want to play. And, you know, I mean, it's a strange hobby in a way, because even simple games, like if you want to play a campaign, that's probably going to be months at the least to play something substantial and to really get into it. And obviously you can do one shots of anything, but that's sort of a different experience, and often games aren't kind of catered to that necessarily. And so like you, yeah, what I really wanted was something in between. I like a little bit more than a one shot so that you can get comfortable with the rules and get to know your character a little bit. But I really felt I didn't need, you know, 12 session, 20 session type material necessarily. For me, yeah, that sweet spot. If I can have like a 3-session game that's like a self-contained, really satisfying experience, then that's great. And so again, yeah, that does actually tie into the kind of multi-season New Game Plus stuff, where I guess you could call it sort of modularity, where the 3-island season, that's a perfectly coherent, self-contained, satisfying experience. But if you like the game and want to keep playing, you can sort of string together these seasons and then go deeper and deeper into the game. So you can play it for longer, but yeah, it is really, it can be broken down into that kind of 3-session or 3-island season.
Kind of feels like nowadays this is the sweet spot of design where you can play short, but there is some kind of option there that gives you the opportunity to expand your play if you really enjoyed it. Kind of like just try it out, and if you like it, keep on going.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so tricky as well. I mean, that's one of the advantages that I gave myself by saying that characters that probably don't continue between seasons. I've been working on a Fortune in the Dark game at the moment. And as soon as you have consistent characters with XP and special abilities and stuff, it's so difficult to tune that to different campaign lengths, because someone who wants a short campaign, you know, they're going to miss out on all this content because they only played 4, 5, 6 sessions. But then you don't want to miss out on the people who do want to keep playing and playing but then are they going to become overpowered because you haven't tuned things for that long form campaign play? So it's so hard to find that balance.
I was earlier really amazed that you turned around this whole project in 2 years, because it's just also so much support material for players and GMs. Can you just talk us through what is available now, what will be available in the future, and what plans do you have for the game?
What is available now is everything that was on the Kickstarter is currently available through Evil Hat. So you can get the standard edition book, the limited edition cover, which is actually my favorite, and the sort of extras package, which is a lot of the support material that you were talking about. So that's big printout maps and various leaflets and pamphlets. All that material is in the main book. None of it's exclusive, but I think it's printed in a form factor that's pretty useful at the table. So if you enjoy the game, yeah, I think that stuff's pretty cool. And, you know, I'm really happy with how it came out. I think it's just fun. It's a fun little folder of printed ephemera. Again, coming from a graphic design background, it was important to me that everything was kind of fun to hold and play with physically and to appreciate on a design level. So I think, yeah, that stuff's pretty cool. So in terms of what's available now, it is all available through Evil Hat. Once the stock of the limited edition and the extras sells out, that's it for that. That was just printed for the Kickstarter. So the standard edition will be available forever, though, as will the Roll20 module I'm pretty proud of. I actually do most of my role-playing through Roll20. So it's important to me that that module hits right, because it's what I use for my own games. And we really put a lot of effort into that. So I think that's pretty cool and worth checking out if you play online as well. It saves you a lot of time and it has some animated backgrounds and stuff like that. It's pretty cool. Yeah, so that's kind of what's available now and in the near future. In terms of what's coming next, I'm working on a third party, well, both a license as well as some help for third party creators like templates. And one fun thing about the game is that because it's all Helvetica, I've made a Google Doc template that looks just like the print layouts. Because of course, you can just use Arial, which basically looks like Helvetica. Don't tell graphic designers that.
Yeah. Designers shaking their heads.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty similar. So I've got a Google Doc all in...
I know what you mean.
All in Arial, and it looks very similar to the print layouts. And so you can use that to make your own Deathmatch Island material. And I'm going to have a guide about writing various... how to write an island, how to write a cast. So that will come out shortly. And of course, more island ideas. Someone suggested a Willy Wonka island would be fun. So now I really want to do that. Chocolate challenges and things.
Nice. Any other games in the pipeline that you're thinking about or designing?
Yeah, I've got a few that I really want to do, but I'm a strict one project at a time person. That's part of the reason I think I turned around Deathmatch Island quite quickly was I had other projects I wanted to do. So it's like, I need to finish this one so that I can do something else again. So the current obsession is a game called Blades in 68, which is the Forged in the Dark game I was talking about. So this will be an official sort of Blades in the Dark. It's in the Duskfall. I'm all arranged with John and everything. And the premise is it takes the setting forward 100 years to 968. So hence Blades in 68. So it's kind of a 60s, 70s take on Blades in the Dark. A little, obviously, Deathloop comes in there again, but a bunch of other touchstones, fun touchstones as well. In the same way that Blades in the Dark is Victorian, but also has a lot of sort of supernatural and fantastical elements. This will have a lot of sort of retro science fiction elements like Soylent Green and Planet of the Apes and things of that nature. So I'm having a lot of fun with it. My detailed maps will be included and I've done colored versions of those. And I think people will enjoy this kind of take on Blades in the Dark. I think Blades in the Dark is certainly for myself and I think many other people. I played so many campaigns and I still kind of love it. But the idea of revisiting such a familiar city in a completely different time and with completely different sort of cultural context, that just seems quite fun to me.
Is there any kind of anecdote or story about Deathmatch Island you want to tell us that you haven't asked about?
I think actually my home game had one of my favorite endings where I was really sure, just because of the kind of players they are, that they were going to all turn on each other in the end and do the standard end game. But then they didn't. They all wanted to break the game. So I was really surprised by that. And we did the standoff, so we're turning over the cards and it was like, break the game, break the game, break the game. But then one player chose the standard end game. They wanted to play to win. I was rooting for them. And the way we decided to adjudicate it was that player, they would basically face off against one player at a time. And once the backstabbing player was taken out, then the rest of them could continue on trying to break the game and get out of there. So this one player had to beat four other characters to win. And well, spoilers, but they did it. But just that process of watching them overcome one person after another, and as they're going along, you know, they're using all their weapons or their acquisitions, they get taking more injuries. Like it becomes increasingly improbable that they're going to pull this off, but somehow they did, and they won the whole thing, and it was just completely improbable and amazing sort of ending, even as it was sort of sad because most of the characters wanted to break the game and try and go home, and this one bloodthirsty backstabber sort of took them all out.
Exactly the kind of content the TV watchers want to see.
Exactly.
Like a glorious gauntlet match at the end of everything. Lovely. That's really nice. Tim, anything else you want to plug or leave our listeners with?
Not specifically. You can check out my work at olddog.games, and there's a link to my newsletter there if you want to keep up to date with any of my projects. As I say, I'm very busy on Blades and 68 at the moment, hoping to continue the pace and do a reasonably fast turnaround on that. I think it's going to be fun. So yeah, if people are interested in that, check it out there. And you can also check out some of my older stuff like the Street Maps or Odyssey Aquatica. And
thank you so much for the interview. That was really interesting and so succinct. Yeah. We were so quick and getting through so much material. I think like you're the most efficient person we've ever talked to, even in the interview. Wow. So from a project management point of view also, I learned a lot.
Oh, great.
Thank you.
No, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for listening to episode 19 of season 11.
We'd love to read your feedback at hi@3w6.fm or on our Discord server.
If you like this episode, please consider writing a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
Or support us on Patreon.
Until next time.